And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's official. The Christmas season has begun. And so we start making lists of friends, family, and the gifts we plan to give. And sometimes, perhaps too often, we lose sight of the original meaning of the story of Christmas. The story of the birth of the Son of God. Even that can become just another story. But this universe, of which we are this amazing microspot of life, is. And although those kinds of thoughts feel awkward to some, the truth is, the truth. Today, we visit the story of the birth of our universe, and ultimately, of ourselves, when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Well, the holidays have officially begun. And it's amazing that although I'm down here in sunny San Diego, sometimes now I find my thoughts drifting back to the snowy-covered fields of Minnesota, with the black naked trees revealing the secrets of the woods for all to see, brittled by a bristling, crispy, cold wind from the north. Sometimes at night, I drive through the early darkness into a crowded parking lot and recall getting ready to brave the frigid winds of the night in order to lean my way against the freezing air, face pelted by frozen bits of night, on my holiday quest for gifts for brothers and sisters, friends and family. And at times like this, I can recall the wonder of the season, when my brothers and I toss tinsel to the tops of the tall green tree, weeping its evergreen tears, which filled the moments with a smell that will always mean Christmas. Thank God for the memories. It's probably just me, but so much of this life just cannot compare with those sacred rituals, all fresh and new. I wish life were as simple as it once was, but alas, these are very serious times. The really good news is that we seem to be awakening from the mysteries of our terror-driven world to wish for something better. The mists of delusion are clearing, and there is a shift within our society to want to take charge again and steer our souls to a higher ground. And it's a good thing, because this earth and the wonders struggle too for life. Take two. And it's a good thing, because this earth and the wonders struggle too for life. This struggle to be is what has driven this universe into an ever more complex alignment of order against the chaos. And today, we take a giant step into the wonder with evolution biologist and author Elizabeth Satoris as we go deep into our ancient galactic and cosmic beginnings. So we bring a special offering of insight to add a richer meaning to this season of birth when the Wild Side News continues following the news. So now, the news. The hurricane season officially ended on Wednesday, but apparently someone forgot to email the news to the hurricane factory known as the Eastern Atlantic Ocean, as Hurricane Delphi and now Epsilon head for the eastern seashore. This record hurricane season included 26 tropical storms, of which an unprecedented 13 became hurricanes. Another record was set with three of the hurricanes ranking at Category 5, the highest on the Saffir-Simpson intensity scale. Conrad Lautenbacher, who heads the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, observed that he'd like to foretell that next year will be calmer, but I can't, he said. He continued, historical trends say the atmosphere patterns and water temperatures are likely to force another active season upon us. In preparation for next hurricane season, experts are recommending learning your Greek alphabet. European warblers are changing their winter travel plans, some say, because of global warming. In winter, warblers for years have left their German breeding grounds and flown down to Africa for the winter, but birders from across Great Britain are reporting increasing numbers of warblers in England and fewer in Africa. The birds have an instinctive option to head west, as into Great Britain, but also carry the knowledge to head south. Increasingly more comfortable weather patterns in Great Britain have caused overwintering migrants to benefit from the good living conditions, which ultimately leads to larger families. Bird offspring generally follow the flyways of their parents, so greater numbers of birds are returning to Great Britain. These changing trends in animal migrations are being noted around the world, indicating that, yes, global warming is beginning to truly affect the living fabric of our world. Here's a new twist on an age-old problem. It seems that herring fish, which swim in their communities, have developed a most ingenious communication system to help them stay together, particularly at night. Unlike their human counterparts, who consider farting a social disgrace and often, quite literally, an intolerably annoying air contaminant, herring engage in community farting to keep in touch with one another. Scientists noted this unique phenomenon while conducting studies in Canada and Britain, capturing the sounds using sensitive hydrophones and infrared video cameras. Scientists noted that the sounds were in sync with small streams of bubbles emanating from the herring's small anal sphincters. Scientists have termed this behavior fast repetitive tick, or FRT. FRTs in fish tend to bring them together. Herring have long been recognized for their good hearing, but scientists had not determined the reason for such abilities. Now it seems the answer has literally bubbled up to the surface. Amazingly, certain whales and dolphins, also noted for their keen hearing, feed on the herring. It's pretty easy to speculate that there just may be a few disadvantages to farting in the ocean, unless, of course, no one is listening. Now, here's a unique dilemma. A war of ideas is being waged in South Africa, where successes in elephant protections have led to a general overpopulation in many of the parks in the country. Some game managers are encouraging reopening the hunting season to keep the population in check, while those opposed state that such could cause strong opposition by tourists and animal lovers. The problem is actually quite serious, as large concentrations of elephants can have dramatic impacts on preserves and parks set up for their protection. The problem is self-generating, as large populations destroy the animals' food sources and thereby can lead to a more generalized starvation. The Environmental Affairs and Tourism Ministry said earlier this year it is considering resuming the elephant kills in Kruger National Park, one of South Africa's top tourist attractions, on the advice of South African National Parks officials. South Africa has repeatedly appealed to the UN body monitoring endangered species to lift the ban on trade in ivory to allow the proceeds to be invested in parks. And from the annals of human behavioral science comes a finding that professional artists and poets have about twice as many partners as other people. Their creativity seems to act like a sexual magnet. And what's more, the study also shows that the average number of sexual partners increased as creative output went up. What the artists produce draws attention to them, which seems to enhance their sexual allure. So if your love life is suffering, you can lead to a quick cure by going to the Wild Side News archives, looking under art, and do what needs to be done. And that's the news. And just a thank you to all you listeners out there who must be sharing the good news, as more and more people are listening each week to your Voice of the Earth, the Wild Side News, keep on turning on the good news. Thanks for listening. Now, we turn our attention to this special in-depth edition of the Wild Side News as we explore the nature of nature, the truth about our ancient cosmic beginnings, with one of the world's leading writers and researchers in the field of evolution biology.
Dr. Elizabeth Sartoris, who has a PhD in evolution biology, is a futurist. She's an author and a speaker. Her work has appeared on NOVA. She's written for Horizon and NOVA TV, and she actually did her postgraduate work with the American Museum of Natural History in New York. I'm so envious of that. What a great place to go to school. And so your focus really is on the living systems. And you've studied this in ways that I think have great merit to our planet right now. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to put this in a framework. So if you were to say what it is that you feel that your message is really trying to impart to us.
Well, I would say that my main message is that we can learn from nature how to get ourselves through this critical transition period for our whole planet. And so I've been a student of living systems for decades, quite a few decades by now, and I find that there are things in our biological evolution that have kind of been precursors to what we're going through now in this process of globalization, which I see as more than win-lose economics, which we have to change, but more generally a process of moving us out of a hostile competition phase into a mature, cooperative, global family phase for our whole species.
I'm sure some people might say that sounds a little bit airy-fairy, and yet in reality it's the hard-edged truth of our future. This is hard science, and that's what one of the things that we're going to interestingly address, and that is the role of science in getting us into this position and how science may ultimately get us out of this position. You have traced life on Earth way back to its beginnings, but I'd love to know, from your scientific perspective as an evolution biologist, what it is that you've discovered.
Yes, Sydney, well, about the airy-fairy thing of relating our social process as humans to biological evolution, let me deal with that first.
Sure.
And just say we are a natural species within a context of other species on what I call this living Earth, and we'll get into that part later about the living Earth. But I think almost anyone who believes in evolution, we are a part of evolution. And we add something new to it with our reflective minds and our social evolution, but essentially the process is a biological evolution process that's not generally acknowledged within the neo-Darwinian framework, and I'd like to talk about why I see things a little bit different from Darwin. But at the moment, basically it's that I see Darwin as having been half right, but having missed about half the picture in evolution, and that has to do with the maturation into cooperation. But you asked me to go back to cosmology, so let me do that too. We, of course, have separate sciences of physics and biology in our Western scientific model, and biology has always been a bit of a second-class citizen, since physics has long been identified as the kind of father science, the main science. And so whatever physics says about our universe, biology has to fit itself into that model. And physics has given us a model of a non-living universe that's running down by entropy, meaning it's heading from a Big Bang to heat death in an endlessly expanding universe. Now, quite a few physicists I know are now working on unified field models, and most of those balance entropy with gravity, meaning balance radiation with gravity, I should say, because radiation is the force that's entropic, that obeys this law of entropy. And the unification problem in physics is how to unite gravity and radiation into one single model. So those people who are uniting them, in one case, physicist Nassim Haramein has a model where he calls gravity centropy, so that we have entropy balanced by centropy. entropy being the radiation force that's infinitely outward, and that, of course, is what we see through our telescopes, whether they're light telescopes or radio telescopes. It's all electromagnetic radiation. And then gravity is invisible to telescopes, but we know, because we can feel and measure it, that it's a concentrating force, an inward force. So if you think of it as radiation infinitely outward and gravity infinitely inward, then you see that you can have a dynamic balance between these two forces. And gravity can also, as Haramain and Rauscher, his partner is Elizabeth Rauscher in this theory, as they call it, centropy, they're talking about, they're also naming it the generoactive force, because by pulling things together, you permit radiation to expand. The contraction and the expansion are kind of like anabolism and catabolism in physiology. You have one force building things up, the other one breaking them down and recycling them. So it's that kind of a balanced cosmology that gets us out of the socially depressing idea that everything is running down and you have to get what you can while you can, which is what we got from this one-way entropic universe, philosophies such as existentialism, the purposelessness of the universe, the non-living universe running down, has just not been very good for us. Now, if it were true, then we'd have to accept that maybe it's not good for us. But if it turns out that this conception of the universe does not fit the current data as well as alternative conceptions, then we have to rethink it all.
What I want to do is project this into the life systems itself, and the fact that we see this as well in the living systems, the male, the female, life and death, but then particularly this coming together of, well, whatever these are. They're not opposites. Male and female are not opposite. They're cooperating two sides of a whole.
Yes, it's a duality that mm-hmm. belongs together.
Mm-hmm. The fact that we do have, for example, male-female as the basis of so much of recreation, perhaps the roots of that go way back into this very primordial dynamic of our universe itself. For myself, my quest has been to really try to understand life from the perspective of the roots of life, which is this cosmological evolution. What I'm trying to get to is the way in which these forces now are manifesting in literally the living systems to show a continuity, to suggest that the forces of the universe itself and our own existence are intimately related. Mm-hmm. And we can literally draw direct logical correlations, potentially, mm-hmm. scientifically, between our existence and life and these manifestations of life, and as well the cosmological principles of expansion and contraction, of radiation and gravity, and that it's real. To me, it gives me purpose to realize that what I am experiencing as a human, for example, on the planet, is really a manifestation of the truth of our universe. It's my own concept of a spiritual nature.
Yes, I would say so. And the problem for me with the Western scientific model is that before it ever does any research to prove anything, it has concepts about what kind of a universe we live in. And it started out with this unquestioned assumption that we live in a non-living universe. Now, interestingly, all the other cultures of our world have seen it as a living universe. The concept of a non-living universe goes back perhaps to the ancient Greeks in our European heritage, because there was that model of spheres within spheres, with holes in the spheres through which an external light shone, and that was the stars. So you can trace that idea of a non-living universe back that far. But some people confuse the idea of a non-living and a dead universe, but they're quite different, because something dead was once alive, and non-living means it never was alive, which is the physics conception of our universe. Now, because other sciences in the world, like the Arabic sciences and the Vedic science and indigenous sciences and others, did not have this concept of a non-living universe, I also decided to question it. And I ended up making a 180-degree turn, which I find many of my fellow scientists have made now, from believing that consciousness is a late emergent product of material evolution in a non-living universe, to the concept of consciousness being the very source of the material universe and everything in it. That's the Vedic or Hindu, ancient Hindu view. And they did, you know, thousands of years of research on consciousness and things like that. This was not a conclusion arrived at lightly. And the East, of course, spends as much time investigating mind internally as we in the Western science traditions spend investigating the externals, the things that are our projected universe or our outer reality, if you like. And when you put East and West together, then just as entropy and centropy, you have a balanced view of a science. And I've come to feel that whenever you see a one-way force in nature, something's wrong, look for its partner. Because the original unity of consciousness, that field we can call God or Brahman or whatever in our traditions, that has to create dualities out of its unity in order to make worlds.
Well, that's a few billion years worth of history. When we return, we continue to explore the new scientific paradigm that brings life to the forefront of how we think. When we return with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.